The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Allison.
Hi everyone, my name is Allison, I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Thanks for having me here tonight. Thanks Judy for asking me to speak. My sobriety date is March 18th, 2012. My sponsor is Anastasia and my home group is the Atlantic Group. I do not remember my first drink. I do remember my first bottles. And I had my first bottles due to an injury. I felt like a broken person. I had to write notes because I don't know if words are going to come out of me without notes. So I always felt like I was on plan B and an adult dealing with my problems. I was a freshman in high school and getting bottles from people who graduated, my sister's boyfriends, and just making friends with older people that were up to no good. And I had a hard time always like comparing myself to other kids who are having fun, and like, I was just like a kid taking antidepressants just to go to school, and it was really sad. but after like the third cast came off, the doctor was like, "You're really not broken, Allison. It's just your head that's broken now." And so what I did was change my routine, change my friends, and I didn't think I'd make it really past high school, and I really took to drinking, and just had so much fear with direction and no control at all. And, you know, when I left my family and went to school, I really lost it and didn't identify really as a college party drinker because I had so much fear and just using liquor to go to class without a headache. And doctors became my God, my higher power, and I just wanted someone to fix me, you know? I wanted to get better, and I didn't know how, so I'm shaking. So I took some time off and started doing all these, like, weird health things, and stopped drinking, because I wanted to get better, stopped any kind of medication I was taking, and basically stopped eating, and had to check into a psych ward. So I couldn't do it anymore, and I was done. And you know, at the psych ward is when you know they gave me tranquilizers and sent me back out into the world, and then I just picked up drinking more than ever. And you know, 8 years later, I carried a job, and I'm drinking, like, on top of the tranquilizer and trying to feel, like, as close to the floor as I can, as, like, grounded, I guess. And, you know, I'm working in a facility. I'm very responsible of, like, patients that I'm working with, and I'm driving them in different places. I'm driving a 14-passenger van at this place, and I'm like, how did I get here? What am I doing? And my psychiatrist recommended a 28-day program, and I said, no, I'm self-sufficient, self-reliant, that's not for me, no thank you, you know, I'm so much better than I've ever been, I'm doing fine. And like at this point, I landed like what people call a dream job, and that's like, I don't know, when things really changed. And I had to start carrying a bottle in my purse when I was going to work and like getting out of work. And it like, was like not appropriate for what I was doing. And someone was like, so how much do you drink? And I was like, well, you know, I drink a glass a night. And they're like, well, do you refill the glass? I was like, yeah, of course I refill the glass. And So, like, she, proceeded to tell me a personal story and gave me an antidote, which was, you know, drink yourself to death or kill yourself by losing everything that's important to you. And she said there are other people like you. You don't know them, but they do meet and they do recover. So, like, that was, like, the first time that was, like, well, there's someone else like me. I never really understood that. So I voluntarily checked myself into a program and followed their suggestion to go to the detox facility the first thing in the morning. And thank you. At Beth Israel is where I attend. Beth Israel Detox is where I attended my first AA meeting. And they seemed like normal people that had a problem like me, but I don't know, they looked, they sounded, they could talk. And I took the lady's number, and I called her when I got out of the hospital, and I met her at a meeting on 50, near Union Square, and went to another meeting the next day at 79th Street, and continued going to meetings every day, and going to the program, and going to work, and I don't know, daily things were very hard in sobriety, and doing the dishes, laundry, all that kind of stuff was really hard, I remember, because you'd like, your mind is just there all the time before you're just numbing everything away and just like a slob. So this guy from my outpatient group recommended the Atlantic group, and I came, and the first time I came, I was like, no way, this is so crazy, these people are so hectic, and just like buzzing, and it wasn't, this at that time it wasn't right, so I went to other meetings and eventually found a sponsor at Midnight Group, and she was an Atlantic Group member, so I did end up coming back to the Atlantic Group. Can't get away from you, Peggy says, yeah, and with that sponsor, took me through the steps, you know, recommended reaching out to other people in the fellowship and making calls. And that sponsor moved away, and like at that point, I really had to take my sobriety in my own hands, and I reached out to more women in the room who had more time and, you know, asked for their suggestion and for help. And like that's when I feel like I started getting better, when I was really asking for help. And last page. Almost. Oh God. So I found a new sponsor, and we made an agreement to work together, and she respected my time, I respected her time, and there was one time we were doing step work, and I started, you know, drifting off and falling asleep, and she was like, Allison, we have an agreement, and I was like, I started crying, and I was like, you care more about my sobriety than me, I need you so much, and when I worked with her, you know, I was praying and meditating before calling and doing nightly inventory and really bringing steps 6 and 7 to the forefront and trying to accept the idea of accepting spiritual principles and practicing them. So that was a huge breakthrough and a big breakdown. It was a lot of crying, kicking, and screaming. And let's see. So here, I'm sober today because of a relationship with God through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the people that brought me through along the way. You know, I wanted to get sober. I didn't know how, and you know, the path has been okay, and I'm here standing in front of all you, like that's a huge achievement. And to the newcomer, you know, I have a better life. I haven't picked up a bottle in 3 years. The only pill I take is Advil, basically, and to the newcomer, just stay, find a sponsor. I mean, I'm saying what everyone else says, but it doesn't happen overnight, so you have to stay and you have to let it work on you and let other people work on you and just be open to receiving that. So thank you very much.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Sean.
That's good. Hi, my name is Sean, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 6, 2015. My sponsor is Matt R. My home group is the Atlantic Group. I'm on step 9 currently, languishing in it very slowly, but trying to make do as best I can. I'm really nervous. I didn't think I would be. I actually like public speaking, which is probably crazy for most people. But anyway, as my sponsor always tells me, you're not at AA groups to win an Emmy Award for comedy or to impress people. Like, there's no job interview going on. You're just here to help people. And I always find that helpful to me because when I'm nervous and I don't want to share, I know I need to, because that's what kept me going for a long time. So I don't really know how else to do this, but chronologically, I guess. It seems like a good sort of rubric here. I grew up in New York, and I always kind of knew I was like a little bit weird. I was kind of a nerdy kid, and I was always a little bit bigger. My nickname was Moose because I was chubby, and so I would draw some, like, you know, and being a nerdy kid, you tried to sort of act better than people sometimes. That was my defense. Like, oh, well, I'm not as good as you, but I'm smarter than you, and I'm going to rub it in your face. And so I would say things to people like, I will physically overpower you, as opposed to, like, I'm going to beat you up. You know, just weird stuff. I got made fun of for that for a long time. And I would worry about stuff, like, really unnaturally. Like, you know, I grew up in the 90s, and I was really nervous that, like, every night that, like, the Soviet Union was going to nuke us. Like that, those are the kinds of things I worried about, and, like, that didn't really make too much sense. So from the get-go, I was kind of like an odd duck. I on the surface, looked really normal. I was really good at school. I was pretty good at sports. Like, I did pretty, you know, wound up going to really good high school here in the city. And I had a decent amount of friends, despite my efforts to sabotage a lot of those friendships by being kind of a jerk, which I think I would imagine a lot of us can identify with. Initially drinking was really fun. I didn't really have too much of a problem with it. Like, I drank like my friends did, and I had a pretty good time with it. And there were a few there were not that many consequences initially. As I progressed and I went to college, I started caring about stuff a lot less. And I remember telling a friend, I was like, I think it's really cool to throw away promise and sort of like talent. And he's like, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. But like, I thought it made a lot of sense. I was like, I thought it was cool to act like bad, because I was always a rule follower and I always wanted to be bad. And like, alcohol makes it really easy to be bad, in case you haven't noticed. I realized, like, you know, with drinking, I was able to be this kind of person that I always wanted to be, and it made me feel really comfortable. And I didn't even realize that till I came here. I honestly didn't. I thought it was just something I did because that's what everyone else did. I went to college. I went to a school in the Midwest that it's really famous for its football team, and it's very Irish Catholic, and, like, that was kind of, like, what went on there. The weather stinks, so, like, what do? You drink. I had a good time with it, but As I went on, you know, I remember traveling to Asia after I graduated from college, and, you know, things had started to happen in college, like blacking out was like routine, and I really thought it was normal. Again, this same friend who I told I thought talent, like throwing away talent, was a really good thing, I was like, man, it really stinks to black out all the time. He's like, I've never blacked out once, and I was like, I couldn't believe him. Like, I thought that was like the norm. And now it's used as like a verb, like to black out is like a word. So like, I just assumed that was kind of like what you did, and that's how you were supposed to drink. Like, drinking one or two, I never got it. I thought it was just like a waste of calories, to be totally frank with you. It just didn't make sense. It was like, either get obliterated or just like, don't do anything. Those are my options. And like, now I realize that like, when I am out and about and I see people drink, they actually have one or two and they don't get unbelievably drunk and, you know, wake up with their suit in front of their building with the key in the door. You know, that's a pretty mortifying experience. But, you know, there are a lot of mortifying experiences like that. You know, I would come out of blackouts in places I would have no idea how I got there. I remember, again, going back to, I went to Asia and I was in Bangkok and I went out with these British guys and like, because I met them at a bar, obviously, because that's how I met everybody. And came to on the roof of a building in a pool in a hotel, and I was like, I have no idea who any of these people are. I have no idea how I got here. But they're like, mate, how'd you get us up here? Like, you don't even know who we are. A terrible British accent. Apologies for any Britons in the room. But, you know, like that type of stuff always happened. The remorse. Like, I would wake up all the time. I'd have to check my BlackBerry to make sure I didn't, like, curse out my employers. Like, I never knew what was going to happen. It was always, like, a flip of the coin. Sometimes I had a great time. I really did. Sometimes it was not a great time. Crashed a car, you know. But there were no consequences for a really long time. Like, I have a really good job. I had a lot of friends. I had a nice apartment. I have a car. All this stuff. You know, so on the surface, like, it was really easy for me to convince myself that, like, nothing was wrong. Despite the fact internally, like, stuff felt terrible. Waking up every morning, like, just feeling awful and not knowing what you did. And then doing it all over again, like, for no apparent reason, that was pretty, you know, amazing to me that you could do that. And, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, my brother has been in the program for a long time, and so I had this seed of AA in my mind for a long time, and that sort of damaged my drinking. Like, it was sort of, because I knew there was something you could do about it. You weren't just, like, doomed to, you know, that unhappy, remorseful life. And, like, but I never fully kind of accepted what you had to do. I was like, I'm going to figure out a better way. I'm going to figure out a way. I'm going to outsmart this. I'm a pretty clever guy. Like, I tried every concoction and every mix you could possibly think of to try to beat this thing, and it didn't work. None of it worked. So, you know, I was like, let me try this AA thing. And I went to a meeting with him and a few people from the Atlantic Group. I think it was a 79th Street workshop. And, you know, I made a real commitment to this program. I went to meetings almost every day in my first 90 days. I worked crazy hours, so sometimes it was the 4 a.m. meeting at midnight, which was interesting. And I you know, but, you know, it didn't matter. I stuck with it. And I didn't talk to people a lot. When I would go to the meetings and I would leave, and I was not... you know, working the greatest program, I guess, but I came to meetings all the time. And I talked to my sponsor every day. And I started reading the book with him. And I started working on the steps immediately. I really jumped in from that perspective. And now, you know, like, a year later, I can't believe that I haven't drunk for a year. It's kind of mind-boggling to me. You know, I am actually a happy person. Like, I never really understood what that meant. And, like, in the mustard seed, there's a sign that said, we'll love you till you can love yourself. And I was like, man, I can't wait till that happens. And, you know, it's starting. And esteemable acts build up esteem, as my sponsors said many times. You know, it's a miracle. Like, this program is a miracle. Like, I've heard crazy stories. I've heard less bad stories than mine, not to compare or whatever, but, like, you do that, right? I'm a human. You know, it's just miraculous that there's so many people here doing the same thing, and I'm so glad that they found this program. So now, you know, I still go to meetings all the time. When I travel for business, the first thing I do is find where's a meeting I can go to. I've really gotten deep into fellowship. I find that to be unbelievably helpful. It makes me really want to go to meetings and want to hang out with other alcoholics. And we can, you know, share experiences. It's really opened up a new kind of, you know, window for me in the program. Like, and it was something that I had been missing, but it's something that I've really kind of worked on, and it's been helpful. Prayer and meditation. Oh my God. I went to Catholic school literally my entire life, and until I went to business school. And, like, But I liked being Catholic. Like, most people, like, you say that and everyone laughs, and I'm like, I don't get it. Doing that stuff every day, every morning, every night, like, it really calms me down. It gets me into a place of serenity, and, you know, it makes my day much better. I connect with my higher power, I always believed in God, but I never actually had a relationship with him, and now I really feel that I do, and it's developing, and it's, you know, when I can't be at a meeting or can't call someone, there's always that, you know, God is there, and it's an amazing thing, and I'm just really thankful to the Atlantic Group for asking me to speak. I never thought, like, I sat up there and I was like, oh my God, it's like a celebrity in AA to speak up here. And I don't feel that way. I know it's about service, but, like, I'm just so humbled. Like, it is really, really a humbling experience to sit here and stand here and speak in front of all of you. And I'm just really grateful to have the opportunity. And I love the Atlantic Group and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. So thank you very much.